We're back, second hour of the National Intel Report. Oh, this subject matter is verboten. Zeke Heil. I can just about imagine there's some people out there thinking, oh, this guy's a neo-Nazi. Oh, he's one of those federally controlled people. By the way, Ted, did you hear about Hal Turner?
No, I didn't.
Hal Turner is the anti-Semite, neo-Nazi. He's the, some people have called him the reincarnation of Adolf Hitler. But at any rate, this guy would make outlandish statements on air. Not based in fact, just based on hyperbole and no fact and a lot of distorted information. And he would frequently call on his listeners to go shoot congressmen and senators and, you know, go after these dirty Jews and a number of things. Well, I'm not saying that this is a good thing to do, to hack into somebody's email accounts, but some enterprising individual did exactly that and discovered that he was an informant for the FBI.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and what he was doing is whipping up the fervor, drawing out those that less than savory in the ADL's eyes, and basically turning them over to the federal government.
Oh, my.
So, and Hal Turner called me a couple different occasions over a couple different networks demanding airtime. And he said, I need an answer. When do I get it? I said, you'll have it as soon as hell freezes over. Michael in New York. Hello, Michael.
You're saying he's an informer.
Get off the speakerphone if you're on one.
John.
Thank you, Ted. Hey. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, sir. Great show, guys. And Ted, always great to hear you and appreciate the updates. I just want to just backtrack a little bit, Ted. With all the scoundrels you mentioned a man named Saint Germain. Is that correct? Did you mention Saint Germain?
Yes, Comte Saint Germain.
Okay, now, the thing is with Saint Germain, he is definitely an enigma. And you can't rule him in with these scoundrels because he's the guy that warned of the French Revolution to Marie Antoinette and the King Louis. They just didn't believe it could happen. And he was the special benefactor that always took care of Marie Antoinette through her whole lifetime. She always wrote in her memoirs how special occasions, birthdays, things like that, always great gifts arriving and always had this extra protection around her and never knew where it was coming from. And so Saint Germain is very much an anti-communist and an anti-globalist international bankster. He's a guy. He's also been very active in exposing the international banking conspiracy for the last 100 years. And in addition, with the Nazis, back in that period, one of the best students of Saint Germain in that era was a man named Rudolf Steiner. Now, Steiner was Hitler's archenemy because Hitler couldn't stand Steiner because Steiner, in the 1930s, was already revealing to the rest of Europe the Nazi agenda and the black magic practices, and the Nazis and Hitler were onto Steiner for being so astute, and they tried to assassinate him at least 3 times, but they could never touch him. And so Rudolf Steiner, was the protege of Saint Germain in that period. So Saint Germain is very enigmatic, and there's all kinds of information on him, and a lot of it is misinformation or disinformation. I just wanted to clarify that.
Michael, I thank you, and I'll get Mr. Pike's response after this. The next caller, is that Arion? Arion. Okay, well, we'll get the name straight when we get back.
Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
Ted, response to what Michael had?
Yes, I find his account rather confusing. He's talking about Steiner during, let's say, 1943 in Germany as being a protege of Saint Germain, and then then he's talking about Saint Germain 170 years earlier in Western Europe and whitewashing him then and saying he was misunderstood. My best reference to the life of St. Germain comes from Nesta Webster in her book Secret Society and Subversive Movements, which was very much praised by Sir Winston Churchill, and she portrays him very blackly as a cabalistic conspirator along with the rest of these Jewish cabalists, which I talked about.
Arian in California. Hello.
Yeah, it's actually Arian. But
some say Stadmiller, some say Stadmiller. So
right.
What's in a name? Go ahead.
If nothing else, today is a good time to clear this up since this is a conversation about, you know, Jewish and Judaism. Listen, there's something I wanted to understand. My parents came here from India, and one thing I've never really quite fully understood, I have some understanding but not 100%, is why there is, and I don't mean from you guys, but just in general, why are there so many strange stereotypes, and it seems like a deep hatred for Jewish people? And let me explain. There are stereotypes for black people being, you know, thuggish and basketball players, and even though that might be an unfair stereotype, you can understand where that comes from. Or even me, I'm from India. People think I own a 7-Eleven or something like that. It's an unfair stereotype,
right,
but I understand it.
Right.
When it comes to Jewish people, though, I've heard things like big noses when a lot of them don't have big noses. Or I've heard things like, you know, they're not part of, like, the white race when a lot of them look European and white to me.
Mm-hmm.
And just one last one I can mention to you. Conspiracies that they control the media, they control everything when 2% of the population in America is Jewish. Why is there such, should I say, animosity towards Jewish people?
Arian, hold on. We'll get the Reverend's response to that. Ted, would you like to respond to this young man?
Well, all I can speak for is myself, Arian, and that is that there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with being Jewish. When a Jewish baby comes out of her or his mother's womb, they are as pure and undefiled as any child of any race in the universe. The problem is that 2,000 years ago, and perhaps even a little bit earlier, there was a group of Jewish leaders in Palestine and in Babylon who forsook the law of God as revealed to their people through the great prophets and Moses and so on, and they created a false substitute oral tradition, which Jesus attacked very fiery way. He said, "Woe unto you, Pharisees, whited sepulchres," and so on. Most Christians are familiar with those passages in the gospel. Anyway, these Pharisees completely took over God's experiment through the Jewish people, the Hebrew people, which was meant to bring in Jesus Christ into the world as a blessing and a savior to all mankind. And these Jewish leaders, especially in Babylonia, for the next 1,000 years, they codified these anti-Christian, anti-Gentile beliefs into the vast and rambling Babylonian Talmud, and also into the Zohar eventually, or Kabbalah. And all of these Pharisaic anti-Christian viewpoints began to be accepted not only by authentic Jews, which eventually populated Spain, Western Europe, North Africa, the Mediterranean, so on, but also the Jewish converts out of Central Eurasia in the nation of Caesarea, which in the 9th century A.D. adopted Judaism. And together, both of these branches of so-called Judaism united in being anti-Christian in their general mindset and ambitions. And if we go into the Talmud, we go into the Zohar, we find many expressions of anti-Gentilism, anti-Christianity. For example, the Talmud in Treatise Sanhedrin says that Jesus is now in hell, writhing in boiling hot semen. And the Talmud is full of these kinds of very antisocial viewpoints. Now, unfortunately, these viewpoints were adopted by the majority of the Jewish people. They gave them greater precedence, greater religious and moral authority than the laws of Moses and the prophets. And as a result, the Jewish people became very, very isolated, very separate from the nations, and they did not have a tendency to intermarry with them and so on. But they also had a viewpoint, many of them, that the role of the Jewish people in their exile from Palestine was to eventually weaken Gentile and Christian power in the nations.
Yeah.
And this mentality that the Jews had an opportunity and a privilege and a calling to subvert Jewish, Gentile, and capitalistic and Christian power, unfortunately does run into the thinking of many activist Jews even today.
Here's what I want to say to that. You know, when I first called in and I gave the example of stereotypes with black people or stereotypes of Indian people, the reason I gave those examples, it's not because I believe in these, you know, stereotypes. I was trying to make the point that although stereotypes may be unfair, there is some logic to them. When I ask the question of why there seems to be animosity towards Jewish people, it's not that I'm saying that it's, you know, there's none of these stereotypes for Jewish people are ever true. I'm not saying that. But some of them are really far-fetched, and your answer, from what I understand, seems to be that some of them today, some of the Jewish people today, still have these things, I guess anti-Christian ways or whatever, in their mind. If that's true, can't you make the same point that many Christians or many Muslims or whatever have anti-other religions in their mind or anti-something else in their mind as well?
Well, the difference is, you see, if you go to the Muslims, you go to the Christians, they also have aspirations for world control. Take the Christians, for example. Christians believe passionately that Jesus Christ will someday come and he will rule the nations with a rod of iron for 1,000 years. He will benevolently rule. Nevertheless, there will be Christian world control on planet Earth. Similarly, the Quran teaches that someday the belief in the unitary sovereignty of Allah will prevail over the whole world. Judaism believes the same thing. They believe someday the whole world, in fulfillment of the prophecies of Isaiah, will be united under a one-world leadership of the Messiah, which we believe, as a Christian, I believe that's the Antichrist. Now, the important question is, what are the methods used to obtain such world dominion? In Islam, we find a history of aggressive attempts to, if the infidels don't convert, then the ancient Muslim armies would take the sword to them and destroy their cities and force them to convert. Conversely, in contrast, Christians, however, are taught by the example of Jesus to turn the other cheek, to do nothing more than preach the good news of salvation and leave it to Christ at his second coming to do all the conquering of the world that is necessary, you see. So there's a great difference between the techniques.
Well, now forgive me. I hope I don't sound like a mantra Christian, because believe me, I'm not. Believe me. But is it fair to say that throughout history there have been plenty of Christian wars and forcing people to turn to Christianity, or am I wrong by saying?
Well, Ariane, let me jump in here, because I don't know if you believe in God, but I do know that there's built-in prejudices within countries. Say that I went to your country, my friend, and even though that I'm not of a Hindu faith or whatever, that I butchered a cow and I had a Texas-style barbecue. Now, even though that does not violate any of my tenets or my beliefs, it would be repugnant to people that follow the more traditional Hindu faiths, would it not?
Well, actually, I can answer it like this. Most people in India, it's not about killing a cow, don't believe in killing animals. So when you give the example of a cow, yes, there are people who hold a cow in higher light. I don't dispute that.
Yes.
But your example is a little bit off, because if it's not about, well, if I kill a cow, will they beat me up? If you kill an animal in general, people wouldn't like that, just like if you came to America and you killed a dog.
Right.
No one would like that.
No, I understand. And Ariane, we're starting to split hairs here. What I was getting around to was the built-in prejudices against other people's faiths that have been used for political purposes for hundreds and thousands of years.
Right, but here's my answer to that. I don't dispute that these prejudices...
Are you on a debate team or something? I mean, I'm trying to look for a point here so I can sum up with you and then move on.
Oh, sorry, am I taking up too much time? I'm sorry.
That's okay. Just letting you know.
Yeah, no, here's what I want to say. Listen, I don't dispute all these prejudices exist in all certain religions, okay?
Yeah.
But in the end, Reverend, you're a reverend, okay? You're a man of God. And you ask the question, do I believe in God? I do believe in God. I'm a God-fearing person.
Right.
In the end, we're all going to die. Is there ever going to be a time where you can just, like, you know, forgive me for sounding like a hippie, but just unite under God? I mean, you know, one example I can give you for people who say that can't be done, there is a country out there, 1 billion people exist in this country. It's the country from where I'm from, India. And there are people of all sorts of different religions who, for the most part, have lived side by side. Can't that be done ever?
Good question, Reverend.
The problem, I want to just get kind of cut to the chase to the real issue we're talking about here. You see, you're asking the question, why is there animosity, prejudices, stereotyping against Jews when they're only 2% of the American population. You see, the problem, Arian, is that there was a very concerted effort, especially during the 20th century, when these masses of Jewish immigrants came over from Eastern Europe and Western Europe, to take control of opinion-making aspects of our society, in specific the Hollywood movie industry. Now, if you go to the Encyclopedia Judaica, which is a definitive source of matters Judaic in the 20th century, go to their article on movies and television and an article on the motion picture industry, and you'll find this Jewish encyclopedia, written primarily by and for Jews, is very vocal, very specific, very expansive in describing how that the Hollywood movie industry was founded almost in its entirety by Jews. They also have articles on the founders of the big three TV networks, which they say clearly define as Jews. Same goes for major publishing in their articles on publishing and radio, you see. So this 2% of the population may be very small, but it's disproportionate.
Ted, the music is blaring. We've got to run for a break. We'll be right back. Are back. By the way, Ted, have you heard of a website called comeandhear.com?
Yes, I have, but I haven't been there.
You need to look at this. You really do. The caller just called during the break, and they have CDs available, Running Circles Around Talmud Censorship. So we have people, and if you click on this thing, it's very fascinating. Meet the Talmud and the students of the Talmud. 3.5 million words of uncensored Talmud online. And they go through the luminaries, the Talmud luminaries. Rabbi Israel Brody, Rabbi Dr. Louis Finkelstein, and other Talmud luminaries.
Interesting.
Yes, it is. So you might want to take a look at that just to see what they're up to. And Arian, thank you for your call, but I think he was kind of, his question was, why are people, you know, why are they so anti-Jewish? Well, or anti-Semitic. And again, please, folks, listen to what we are saying. Reverend, have you talked to anybody from the organization up in New York, Rabbi Dovid Yisrael Weiss?
I actually haven't talked to the people from Tura Karta, but they are very similar to me in the sense that they hold out that God requires obedience from the Jewish people before they can legitimately return and occupy the land of promise.
And they outright call the state of Israel a Zionist-held territory, and it should not be.
That's right.
Now I don't see the ADL going after them like they did Ahmadinejad. He made a statement and it was twisted in the news that
well,
Israel needs to be wiped off the face of the map. No, he said Zionism needs to be wiped off the face of the map. He didn't
There are actually groups of ultra-Orthodox Jews, many ultra-Orthodox in Israel today, among the Haredim or the Kabbalistic Jews who are still adamantly opposed to the existence of the state of Israel, even though they live there and are settlers on the West Bank and so on.
My father, which was not a spiritual man at all, and he was not very, how should I say, warm or communicative. But he told me one time when I was a small child, he said, "You know, sometimes I lay awake at night and I think about how big the universe is, and it scares me." I think that's really the only thing that really scared my old man. And I was just absolutely enthralled with this, just staring at this picture and really starting to grasp how large this universe really is. Had a similar experience, personal experience. I was snorkeling off of Cayman Islands. And I got into, I got far enough out. I was into the ocean swells by myself. I lost sight of land. And at that point in time, a remora, a little sucker, tried to attach itself to my chest, and it was a rather large thing, and I began to think, wait a minute, these things travel, they have host. If this thing is this big, what was it attached to, and is it around me? At that point in time, personally, in regards to just my little dirt ball of a planet here, I got the idea of how big I really was. And I understand what you're saying, Ron. We have a tendency to look at this world through our own eyes and our own perceptions. What I've been learning over the years is humility and how minuscule and how temporary I really am. At any rate, Ted, some parting shots on our conversation today.
Well, it's very important, John, that people do something about this outrage of arresting Dr. Tobin for his thoughts. This is thought police in action, international speech crime enforcement. We cannot let this be established as a precedent in international law, because the long arm of hate crimes enforcement is coming to the Americas, too. What we need to do is come to truthtellers.org. At www.truthtellers.org, we have a comprehensive list there of all of the most important figures in the British government, from Harold Brown, Prime Minister, down to the heads of the major parties, the smaller parties, as well as the Thought Police, the Crown Protection Agency, which arrested Tobin. People can call, they can fax, they can email these people in the British government for the next week. We need to bombard them with protest, international protest, letting them know that the world is watching Britain. Britain was a cradle of free speech for the last 500 years in the Western world, and now it's indulging in an abolishment of free speech and expression through this travesty. So come to truthtellers.org. Take down some of those names. We actually have a statement there, a brief statement you can paste in and send off by email to these officials in England. Let them know that this is not being done in a corner. It's not being done in secret from the rest of the world, and the rest of the world is very angry about it.
All right. Reverend, you've had a full schedule here. You've hit several of our talk show hosts here, Rick Adams, Robbie Noel, Charles Giuliani, Stan Monteith over at GCN. Continue the fight, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. I just got an email. I'll be on with Jeff Rentz at 9 o'clock on Genesis tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ted. Appreciate it very much.